time once again for Community Forum, and we're very lucky to have with us live in the studios this morning Professor Gregory Sumner. Professor Gregory Sumner is Chair of History at the University of Detroit Mercy, where he has taught since 1993. He holds a doctorate in American history from Indiana University and is the author of two books, Dwight MacDonald and the Politics Circle, and his new book, which he is here to talk about, Unstuck in Time, A Journey Through Kurt Vonnegut's Life and Novels. Greg, thank you very much for coming and spending time with us this morning.
Mike, it's great to be here in Seattle and to be with you this morning.
So tell us, what was your motivation in writing your book, Unstuck in Time?
Yeah, you know, Kurt Vonnegut taught writing. He taught creative writing and so forth. He was a great student of stories and so forth. And his first rule for writers is to find a subject that you care deeply about and you feel in your heart others should care about. And that's what I did with this second book, with this book on Kurt Vonnegut. I don't think I'm the classic Vonnegut reader. I'm a kind of mid to late baby boomer. I didn't read Vonnegut in the 60s, as many did the first generation of Vonnegut readers who read Cat's Cradle, God Bless You, Mr. Rosewater, and of course his most famous masterpiece, Slaughterhouse-Five. I ran into Vonnegut in the mid-70s, and I was reading Breakfast of Champions was my entry point. And probably my greatest credential for writing about Vonnegut is I am from Indianapolis. I understand what he sometimes derided and sometimes celebrated as Midland City. I grew up in suburban Indianapolis, and when I inherited a copy of Breakfast of Champions from my older brother, I started looking at these doodles, this kind of upside-down American history, this irreverence, this humor, this profundity, and I had this I had this feeling this guy's describing my world in suburban Indianapolis in the doldrums of the 70s, and he's a friend. And I find that various Vonnegut readers of various Vonnegut generations all have that same feeling, that there's this voice here. Here's a friend who sees the world off-kilter like I do, and I want to go on the journey with this friend. So I didn't start with Cat's Cradle and Slaughterhouse-Five. I started with Breakfast of Champions. I was actually drawn to Vonnegut's life. I'm an historian. I'm not a literary critic, or, you know, I'm not all about the books primarily. I was about his life. I liked his nonfiction. I got to see Vonnegut do a couple of road show performances like Mark Twain when he came to Indianapolis in the 80s and early 90s and found his voice bracing, hilarious, challenging, and also compassionate. And so he was kind of in the back of my mind. And as I was searching for another topic, I like biography. I think I like curmudgeons who have hearts of gold underneath their exteriors. This Dwight MacDonald was my first subject, the literary critic. It's an outgrowth of my interest in 20th century history and a life, an amazing life, well-lived, with all kinds of contradictions. I view his books, and that's sort of the last thing I did. I worked backward through all of his 14 novels in Unstuck in Time to try to put them in historical context, I think Vonnegut said the most important person or character in all of my books is me. I find Vonnegut and his amazing life, really going from the Great Depression up to the early 21st century, I find it a kind of diary of the 20th century. So as an historian, I liked it. As a person from Midland City, the Midwest, I admired Vonnegut as a kind of Twain-like figure who spoke a vernacular and a speech that I understood. I like the direct expression of style. Vonnegut comes from journalism. He comes from the sciences. He doesn't have a traditional pedigree as a writer. He studied anthropology. There are so many different things about Vonnegut that I found fascinating that I found were not being discussed. I would talk to many people, particularly slightly older baby boomers, and they'd say, I used to read Kurt Vonnegut. And they kind of put him in that 1960s bubble. And I want to get his readings, his books, his novels, his life. I want to get him unstuck in time from being a relic kind of the 60s. And also this sense that Vonnegut is something you read, it's kid stuff. It's something you kind of read when you're in high school or you encounter maybe in college. I find great profundity in his work over the arc of 50 years of writing novels. I find him in his life and the struggles in his life permeating his books. I find him to be a writer for the 21st century. I already told you I'm not a conventional Vonnegut, I'm not the first generation reader. I'm finding many, many young people today are reading Vonnegut, both in the United States and around the world. And when I, as I'm doing this global book tour, I'm asking people, what was your journey to Kurt Vonnegut? And the youngsters have a whole different take on Vonnegut than say, the people from the 60s and 70s. And so I think that Vonnegut lasts. I think the books read together as a whole tell the story of a life and of a century, you know, riven with conflict, riven with trauma, but full of drama and excitement and interest, and transmuting pain into love and to healing and into community. I think Vonnegut is a moralist with a sense of humor, dark humor, who will be read in the future to understand the century we've been through, as Mark Twain is read to understand the 19th century. So, you know, I felt the story wasn't being told. The Vonnegut that I care about was kind of being put in a box, and I wanted to get his art unstuck in time. And to me, again, as I go around, the most exciting thing about Kurt Vonnegut today is that 20-year-olds are reading him. And they're finding, again, that same experience. We talked before we came on. You read, I think, Slaughterhouse-5 mm-hmm. in high school.
Yeah.
Readers today, the 20-year-olds, are saying the same thing that readers of Cat's Cradle were saying in 1963, or I Have a Friend. And it's this powerful Midwestern voice, very direct, full of kind of gallows humor sometimes, but full of compassion. I also want to get Vonnegut unstuck from being seen as kind of this man of gloom. He went through the traumas of the 20th century. He went through painful experiences in his life. He didn't walk away from those. He was kind of ruthlessly honest about how those things affected him. But ultimately, I walk away from Vonnegut feeling better about life, feeling the honesty is liberating, and feeling he never lost hope. He never lost the capacity, the search for family, community, love. I find beneath Vonnegut not cynicism, but maybe this greatest generation guy who still had that kind of patriotism, that kind of romantic idealism that was much battered by the end of his life, but he never lost faith in that. And I'm drawn to that, too. I'm a guy from the Midwest, and I suppose I'm a romantic. So, you know, sometimes Vonnegut is classified as a postmodern writer. He certainly used postmodern techniques. He fractured narrative, and, you know, it took him 25 years to write about his war experiences, and he did it in very unconventional ways. But beneath it all, I find him to be an idealistic Midwestern guy with kind of old-fashioned, almost conservative values, who very much speaks to me in 2011 about what things we need to recover and restore and hang on to and build on to build a better future here in the 21st century.
So tell us a bit about his history and how that shaped his, how you see it as that shaping his, some
sure.
of his writings.
It's interesting. By the way, I never got to meet Kurt Vonnegut in person, which I regret, but I got to see him in a couple of roadshow performances, and I wrote to him in the late 1990s, and he was very kind and generous to me, and he kind of said, "Who are you? You're this younger guy from Indianapolis." I've lived in Detroit for 20 years, but I grew up in Indianapolis. I expressed this interest in maybe writing his life story, and he wrote back, and if I could just quote from his letter to me, he said, "I was once hired to write a scenario based on the French lieutenant's woman. I had to give it up because everything was in people's heads. In the world of the senses, absolutely nothing happened. My life has been pretty much like that." So Vonnegut was kind of being diffident and kind of humble and saying nothing much happened in my life. Quite the contrary, in my opinion. Vonnegut was born German, fourth generation German-American in 1922 in Indianapolis. His parents had gone through the trauma of the anti-German sentiment that swept through the Midwest and really the whole country during World War I. So Vonnegut always said, you know, the planet my parents understood, and he often used these sci-fi kind of references, the planet my parents thought they understood was destroyed by the First World War. They decided it was not a good thing to be a German-American in Indianapolis. And so they decided, he said, to lobotomize themselves, to cut off the German culture from their children. So he was born in the 1920s, very prosperous German-American family still. but beginning to have problems. Prohibition shut down the family brewery on his mother's side of the family. Then came 1929. And really, Vonnegut always says, always said, you know, I'm a child of the Great Depression. I am a student of the American dream, and what I see is a lot of failure, a lot of downward mobility, a lot of defeat. And he writes about that, and he sort of challenges the American dream. He saw his parents losing their money and going downward, and his father, who was an architect, didn't work for 15 years and things like that. They weren't at bread lines or soup kitchens, but he saw downward mobility. It ultimately, his mother couldn't deal with it. And she committed suicide on Mother's Day of 1944 because she could not deal with the diminished circumstances of the family. Then Vonnegut goes off to war after studying journalism and being a schoolboy journalist. And he goes to Cornell to study chemistry and biology and mostly plays hooky at the campus newspaper. He goes to war. And he describes himself as a kid, ill-equipped, no combat boots, wandering around in the snow. He happens to be inserted with a group of American GIs into the Battle of the Bulge, which is the greatest defeat of American arms in our history, if you exclude the Civil War. Chaos. He saw war not as a John Wayne type of experience, and that's what Slaughterhouse-Five is about. It was chaos. He said, when I got to I was looking for the enemy lines, I was looking for our lines, I'm wandering around in the snow, ill-equipped, I'm a boy, I'm scared. People said, how did you survive that war experience? He said, I imitated various war movies I'd seen. And he was captured by the Germans, which is an interesting thing that the German soldiers were saying, why are you fighting your brothers and your cousins, Vonnegut? You know, why? He said, for all those guys meant to me, they might as well have been Bolivians and Tibetans, because as so often in the American experience, I'd been cut off from my ancestors' culture. I didn't have this German culture. He spent 6 months in captivity as a prisoner of war, which is an epic story in itself, riding boxcars. He knew defeat. He knew the fear. His was a very unglamorous war in many, many respects. And this kind of goes counter to the American Hollywood's tradition of victory, of kind of romantic celebration of warfare and so forth. He went through the apocalypse, obviously the central event of Kurt Vonnegut's life. He'll always be associated with the destruction of Dresden, which he survived miraculously, just by, almost by fate. Of course, that's a theme of all of Vonnegut's books, that we're not as in control of our lives as we think we are. We are pawns of fate. He saw this during the Great Depression, people being tossed around by forces larger than themselves. He saw it as a soldier in war. When he and his 100 fellow Americans went down into that bunker, Schlachthof 5, they came up and the city was gone, and it was only by accident that he survived. Vonnegut was bombed by his own people, by his own side. His life itself was a kind of study in contradiction, absurdity, defeat, and also, though, living through that and keeping going. I think the signature phrase everybody quotes from Slaughterhouse-Five, so it goes, I think that that's that strength where you go through all the traumas of the ups and downs of the economy, the difficulties of life, the problems of death, the problems of war, and you keep going. So he lived through the apocalypse, came home, and then tried to build a life for himself. He did the post-war thing. He got married. He had children. He studied anthropology on the GI Bill at the University of Chicago. Saul Bellow was also a fellow student there. He had several thesis ideas for his anthropology master's degree. They were all rejected by his committee. Fortunately, this was rectified in 1970, I believe it was. Cat's Cradle, which is an anthropological exercise where Vonnegut creates a religion on a Caribbean island. The committee at the University of Chicago accepted that as Vonnegut's master's thesis, and he got his master's degree in anthropology. But Vonnegut struggled for 20 years as an unknown writer, kind of categorized in the science fiction bin, writing for, or the science fiction ghetto, as he sometimes called it, writing short stories for magazines, which no longer exist because of television. And then suddenly he faces this unbelievable celebrity in 1969 when his war story, which took him 20 years to find a language to express, when Slaughterhouse-Five came out right in the middle of the Vietnam trauma, and a whole new generation of young people in particular was ready for it. And so he spent the last 35 years of his life. He moves to New York from Cape Cod, where he'd been living. He's a celebrity. He's a sort of iconic figure. One thing I'd like to get across to people is that the later novels of Vonnegut are very, very valuable. With Unstuck in Time, if I could get the first generation of readers to go back to books that they thought they knew, and I kind of have a chapter on each of Vonnegut's novels, go back and reread those books. They have a profundity and a depth to them that is sort of concealed by the simplicity of their expression. Vonnegut always said, you know, Slaughterhouse-Five took me 25 years to write. I wrote and wrote and rewrote and threw away a lot of paper. He said, Slaughterhouse-Five is about as thick as the Bobbsey twins. But it is a work, the work of a craftsman, and every sentence has meaning. And he was very careful about all of his writing. A lot of the books that look simple are kind of tossed together. He devoted great care to putting together. So I would say reread books you thought you knew, and go read some of the latter books from the 70s, 80s, and into the 90s. I love books like Jailbird, which is about Watergate, among other things. And I love Dead-Eye Dick, which is Vonnegut kind of imagining, what if I had never left home? The American dream of leaving home and finding your fate elsewhere. What if I'd stayed in Indianapolis? That's really, to me, what that novel is about. Galapagos is a fantastic mid-1980s rethinking of evolution, and I think also, by the way, a commentary on Reaganomics and social Darwinism, which he very much opposed. And in Galapagos, if you're scientifically minded, if you liked Cat's Cradle, you will love Galapagos from the mid-80s. It's very scientifically sound, and it imagines that human beings have these ludicrously large brains that are ultimately dysfunctional and almost lead to our demise. And we're a misfire in evolution. It's a hilarious kind of bringing down of human ego, human vanity. I love Bluebeard from the late 80s. I think it's Vonnegut's first real love story. He allows himself to have kind of genuine love between a man and a woman in Bluebeard. And then Hocus Pocus, I mean, if you're interested in Occupy Wall Street, the growing disparity of wealth, read Hocus Pocus, Vonnegut's one of his last novels from 1990. After a decade of Reaganomics, it's about an America in which the super rich have kind of abandoned any kind of sense of responsibility for the country. And it's a dystopian portrait of America in 1990 that is very, very relevant to 2011. By the way, I think Vonnegut would be out there with the Occupy Wall Street people. You know, he would embrace the idea of socialism. I think he was not a thoroughgoing political theorist, but I think he vaguely liked the idea of socialism. He felt the inequality of wealth in our country, much as Mark Twain did, was destroying the country in the second Gilded Age. Kurt Vonnegut got his socialism, if you want to call it that, rightly. He loved Eugene V. Victor Debs, another Hoosier, and I'm a Hoosier too, so... he loved this lost progressive tradition, and he inherited it from his parents, much as he inherited his atheism, his agnosticism. He said, I wasn't rebelling against anything when I called organized religion anti-Christian. I got it from my free-thinking German-American parents and grandparents and great-grandparents. Vonnegut was once asked by Playboy, I think, in 1973, as he'd been involved in anti-Vietnam War protests and various challenges to the government and so forth. Vonnegut was asked, are you a radical? And he said, I don't think so. He said, everything I believe in, I learned in public school 43 in Indianapolis, Indiana, during the Great Depression, with full approval of the school board. And he said, I got a very good grade. So Vonnegut believed in, you know, war was not something to celebrate. It was something to avoid if we could. He didn't like the warfare state. He felt the Constitution had been hijacked by the wealthy. He opposed, you know, he had a lifetime of opposing Nixon and Reagan and Bush and so forth, feeling the country had rather been hijacked by the powerful. And he spoke for the little guy. He spoke for the people who struggled under this survival of the fittest social Darwinism thing, mentality that is part of one version of the American dream. And he spoke for a different American dream. And that's really the bottom line testimony of my book, is this is an American writer who represents some tried, and Kurt Vonnegut is as American as hot dogs in Indianapolis, Indiana, for gosh sakes. And it's a voice that we should pay attention to kind of remind us of our best ideals. And I think he's very, very relevant in the year 2011 and beyond. I think he's a writer for the 21st century. And I think the testimony to that is that young people are reading Kurt Vonnegut now. So I want to give those young people sort of a guide to who was this man and how did his life infuse his books. And I want to get all generations of Vonnegut readers, and particularly the early boomers, to go back and reread some of those books, reread the later books, and see them as a whole. And you will find a unity and that voice that we talked about, that voice that comes right through. That you read one paragraph of Vonnegut, you really should read the whole thing, is my opinion about it. But
so, did he see himself primarily as an artist or an activist or both?
Oh, I think he thought he was, as I say, he was not a thoroughgoing political theorist. He thought his political views were a little bit on the soft side. They were kind of underdeveloped. Vonnegut was an artist. He came from a family of architects and painters. He happened to have an aptitude and an ability to tell stories and to make people laugh, which I think he learned as the kid brother growing up with two gifted elder siblings in Indianapolis in the Great Depression. He studied the radio comedians of the 1930s. He loved Laurel and Hardy. And he learned to make jokes, and he learned to tell stories, and he really wanted to be a journalist. And so he had a series of incarnations. He kept going back to writing. But I think particularly later in his life, he did a lot of art. And I think he viewed creation, it's all kind of the same thing. And I think Vonnegut would say, yeah, I'm an artist, but, writing is a job for me. Typical greatest generation, Great Depression person. He said, writing's a job for me. I used it to support my family. It's made me, comfortable circumstances. But writing's a job. And if I couldn't write anymore, I'd find another job. And I think he said he would have probably just have been happy playing the clarinet or, painting and doing visual art and so forth. And he did much more of that later in his life. So, again, everybody wants to pigeonhole Kurt Vonnegut as a relic of the 60s, as something you read when you're young, as this writer. I think he didn't like to be pigeonholed as anything. He viewed creation. He did inherit the kind of German-American love for culture and craftsmanship. He would have liked to have been an architect. He would have liked to have stayed in Indianapolis and been a partner with his father. It didn't happen. But I love that ethic that you're a child of the Great Depression. You get a job. You lose your job, you get another job. I think he viewed writing, art, being an artist, is part of what human beings need, along with families and communities, to be human. But his actual expression and in terms of the marketplace, I think he was an activist in the sense that he was a concerned citizen. He wanted to be a responsible elder as he got older. He said, I was raised to be bughouse about the Constitution. And he said, artists play a particular, a lot of people know this, he said, artists play a particular role in a democracy when things are going badly, when civil liberties are under fire, when we're being run roughshod over. Artists are kind of like the canaries in the coal mine. They're an early warning system. And because of their sensitivity and their detachment and so forth, I think he viewed being an artist and being a citizen as two important things that made Kurt Vonnegut, but they were not the whole picture.
Only a few minutes left. Did you get a sense for what the motivation was for his writing his first novel?
Mm. Yeah, it's interesting. I really think he wrote his early writing career. He worked at at General Electric in Schenectady, New York for 4 years, which he said it was like science fiction where I was working in the late 40s, early 50s. He was able to quit that job and try to be a writer because he was able to write these, I think, very well-crafted short stories that are available in collections like Welcome to the Monkey House, and they're still releasing these posthumous collections, Look at the Birdie and so forth. The stories he thought were to make money, to get payment. He wrote the novels. It took him a long time to become a novelist. He wrote his first novel, Player Piano, to describe what he was seeing. He said, "I didn't really think it was a science fiction novel. It's sort of man versus machine. It's about computers, these behemoth computers of the UNIVAC early period." He said, "Player Piano, my first novel, was a description of General Electric and the company town of Schenectady, New York." And he said, I didn't mean to write science fiction, but it kind of came out that way. I think he wanted to tell stories. He wanted to kind of document his life. But I really think he was a moralist like Mark Twain. He'd seen the pain of what people can suffer through, particularly during the Great Depression and World War II. And he was not a Luddite. He didn't hate machines. He didn't hate technology. But he worried what happens to human beings when we become more and more dependent on or under the thumb of machines. So it's, you know, he started to write on it for a number of reasons. I think he was a born storyteller. I think he wanted to document his own life, but I think he wanted to deal with deeper issues, and this is where I see the connections to Twain. He looked like Mark Twain, for gosh sakes. He did these road shows like Mark Twain. He became very kind of pessimistic late in his life like Mark Twain. But I think he was a moralist. I mean, don't you see this? If you read Mark Twain, you see operating at a deeper level some issues about America, about humanity, about how we treat each other. Sirens of Titan, 7 years later, which is, again, a kind of science fiction book. It was marketed in paperback form, sold at PX's and drugstores with an asteroid belt and a buxom siren woman, you know, playing around. That's not what the book's about at all. That's how it was marketed. It's about his generation of veterans coming back, men trying to rebuild their lives after seeing destruction, after going so close to death. How do you come back and build a family? It's a kind of hero's journey, and I compare it in my book to some of the mythologies of you know, Joseph Campbell. Mother Night, I could go through each book. Mother Night is a contemplation about human morality in an absurd, hostile universe. In this case, it looks like a spy novel, Mother Night, but it's about an American who's a spy in Nazi Germany. It all draws from his experience in World War II, and it has he says, "I know what the moral of Mother Night is. We are who we pretend to be, so we must be careful who we pretend to be." It's about human identity, which is very fragmented in the modern world. Cat's Cradle, probably Vonnegut's most popular book, the book that I recommend people start with. It's this rollicking calypso-inflected story of a Caribbean island, and the world is destroyed by something called Ice Nine. It's about the Cuban Missile Crisis. It's about the possibility of nuclear apocalypse. It's about the responsibility of scientists for their creations. And a lot of his books leading up to Slaughterhouse Five, I think what really drove him, what really drove Kurt Vonnegut in the first half of his novelistic career, was moving back to Dresden, because in a number of his early books, the apocalypse happens. But it's not until Slaughterhouse Five that he actually full-on looks at a story for which there was a hole in the middle of that story of apocalypse. He couldn't remember. The people he talked to couldn't remember. He wrote Slaughterhouse Five. He flowered like a blooming flower. It hit the marketplace, and then he struggled. "I don't know what I want to do now." He tried to be a playwright for a while, but he kept going back to the novel. And the second half of his career is he sort of purged Dresden from his agenda, and he deals with other so every book is personal, and it deals with deep existential questions, I think.
All right. Well, unfortunately, with that, we are out of time. I want to thank you very much for coming in and spending time with us this morning.
It's been great. I'm not a morning person, but I can talk about Vonnegut 24/7. So Unstuck in Time was a labor of love.
All right. We've just been speaking with Greg Sumner. He is author of the new book, Unstuck in Time, a journey through Kurt Vonnegut's life and novels.